Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
Thanks, Katie. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you don't mind. I'm probably going to be napping a little bit during this broadcast. This time change thing got to me today. And I was up late. I was doing an interview with the a fine all-night program. Not heard in your area. Anyway, that's enough about me. What about our friends? Pakistan. This is from the Washington Post. As troops massed on his border near the start of the Persian Gulf War, Iraqi President Saddam Hussein weighed the purchase of a $150 million nuclear package deal that included not only weapons, designs, but production plants and foreign experts to supervise the building of a nuclear bomb. This according to documents now uncovered by a former UN weapons inspector. Where was he going to buy that stuff from? The offer was made in 1990 by an agent linked to now-disgraced Pakistani scientist A.Q. Khan. It guaranteed a weapon assembly line capable of producing nuclear warheads in as little as 3 years. But Pakistan is our friend, and we invaded Iraq. Iraq lost the chance to capitalize when months later a multinational force crushed the Iraqi army and forced Hussein to abandon his nuclear ambitions. According to nuclear weapons expert David Albright, who describes the proposed deal in a new book. Good luck with that, David. Iraqi officials at the time appear to have taken the offer seriously and asked the Pakistanis for sample drawings as proof of their ability to deliver. The offer is not a sting operation, an Iraqi official scrawls in ink in the margins of one of the papers. The newly uncovered documents suggest that Khan's offer of nuclear assistance was more comprehensive than previously known. A 1990 letter attributed to A.Q. Khan, or to a business associate of his, offered Iraq a chance to leap past technical hurdles to acquire weapons capability. Now, with the practical experience and worldwide contacts Pakistan has developed, you could have a bomb in about 3 years' time and by spending about $150 million from the memo. Refers to Pakistan, doesn't refer to Khan as an individual, even though, of course, Pakistan has long maintained that he was a rogue element and had nothing to do with the Pakistani government. The offer is similar to proposals Khan made to Libya and Iran during the 1980s and 90s. He's, of course, celebrated in his country as father of Pakistan's bomb. He was placed under house arrest in 2004 after he acknowledged his role in the international smuggling ring for nuclear technology. Pakistan says he acted alone. But Khan, in a series of memos and letters obtained by the Washington Post, says he carried out the instructions of senior government and military officials. In his book, Albright says Khan could have been stopped if governments and private businesses had been more willing to share intelligence. He cites results of a secret Dutch investigation into Khan's activities in that country in the 1970s, which confirmed Khan's theft of sensitive nuclear blueprints, yet failed to result in a broader inquiry. But there are friends. Why would you want to have an inquiry into our friends? I don't. Dateline Baghdad, after initially playing down the scope of the violence during last Sunday's elections, the U.S. military has now concluded in an internal assessment that at least 37 people were killed in 136 attacks. That, my friends, is the new Iraq. The military has concluded that at least 30 of Sunday's attacks, which included bomb blasts, rocket attacks, and small arms fire, killed or wounded people. A U.S. official provided the data to the Washington Post on condition of anonymity because it is at odds with the public statements of senior military officials who are busy making things look nice. Because that's what you do. You create some rubble, and then you say, hey, look how nice it looks now. We made nice rubble. We made nice rubble for the people. And one more item, ladies and gentlemen, while I'm over here messing with the buttons. This is from the Buried Lead Department. The Times of London reports the story of this American citizen who's being held in Yemen, being accused of being an Al-Qaeda militant. And the fact that he worked for 6 years at a series of U.S. nuclear power plants, we know that. But that's the lead in the story from the Times. You get way down to the bottom, right here, You see where my miner's helmet is pointing? This paragraph, at the very end. American officials worry that Yemen is becoming the biggest terrorist staging ground for al-Qaeda, with many members of the group having moved there from Afghanistan and Pakistan. They move. Interesting. So when we get bogged down in a great land war, they just pick up and move. They're too smart for us. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And of course, we're tougher than they are. Don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen, please. Well, get me wrong for a minute. Okay, thanks. The United States Army Corps of Engineers, what are they up to? The Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure of the House of Representatives now says the Corps of Engineers is lagging in implementing a reform passed way back in 2007. The Water Resources Development Act required increased transparency, check, accountability, double check, and modernization. The most sweeping reforms of how the Corps develops and implements projects since the Water Resources Development Act of 1986. We reformed them then. We don't need to. We did. The report says that since the new act was enacted, the Corps has been slow to implement the reforms and projects in the law, and the results have often been inadequate and inconsistent with the intent of the law. You want transparency? How about these shades? Among the issues the report examines are the Corps' failure to follow its mitigation requirements and submit larger or controversial projects to an independent review. That would be nice. That would be nice. Improve the quality of analysis. That would be nice. Update its guidelines for project planning and streamline its project delivery process. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, they're doing a great job. And then there's FEMA. In a giant auction, wow, imagine the size of the auctioneer, the federal government has agreed to sell for pennies on the dollar most of the 120,000 formaldehyde-tainted trailers it brought it to New Orleans nearly 5 years ago to house the victims of the flooding. The sale of the units has triggered a new round of charges that it's endangering future buyers for years to come. Besides formaldehyde, the units might be plagued by mold, mildew, and propane gas leaks, according to FEMA itself. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel wrote in a consumer alert regarding the trailers, quote, proceed with caution, extreme caution, if you are tempted to respond to what appears to be an attractive offer for a travel trailer or manufactured home. He and others cautioned that the FEMA units could be resold many times, including over the Internet. Oh, God, no. And that unscrupulous sellers could remove the warning labels that FEMA is putting on the trailers or withhold information about the dangers. This year, for example, building inspectors in Missouri discovered damaged FEMA units sold as scrap in a mobile home park. The units were billed as housing, even though their paperwork specified they were not to be occupied. The sale of the units, however, will be completed by April 3. Lawmakers are upset, on the other hand, about loss of taxpayer dollars from the pennies-on-the-dollar approach to selling the units. FEMA officials defend the sale, noting Congress has complained that the government has spent $220 million over 3 years to store vacant units. You can't sell them, you can't live in them, you can't store them. Send them to the moon. That costs money, too? Wholesale buyers from the auction must sign contracts attesting that the trailers will not be used, sold, or advertised as housing, and trailers will carry a sticker saying, not to be used for housing. Officials said that although formaldehyde could still be present in some units, they would be safe for recreational use occasionally rather than round-the-clock living. They also say because they're in such poor condition, people will not choose to live in them. Those are the same people whose warnings I trust about stuff that's supposed to last a million years. Don't live in this. Okay, that'll happen. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Think of it.
We're so sorry.
Two daughters made pregnant 18 times over a 25-year period by their father have received an apology from the agencies who failed to protect them. The apology was made at a news conference in England that revealed the findings of a case review. The man in question, who cannot be named, lives in Sheffield. He was given a life sentence after admitting the crime. The review found missed opportunities and collective failures to protect the children over three decades. It was carried out by boards responsible for safeguarding children in Sheffield and Lincolnshire, England, and acknowledged that the family had contact with 28 different agencies and 100 members of staff over 35 years, including police, doctors, nurses, and social workers. The U.S. State Department has been drawn into an international dispute between Libya and Switzerland after Muammar Gaddafi demanded an apology for a U.S. official making disparaging remarks. The disagreement between Libya and Switzerland began in 2008, when Gaddafi's playboy son... Do you know about that? He has a playboy son. Does he have a playgirl daughter? I don't know. Hannibal was arrested in Geneva on charges of beating two domestic employees. Charges were eventually dropped. Gaddafi responded furiously, cutting oil supplies to Switzerland. In February, confusion over the term jihad in a Gaddafi speech and the dispute itself prompted U.S. State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley to say Gaddafi's comments reminded him of Gaddafi's speech to the United Nations, which involved, quote, lots of words and lots of papers flying all over the place, not necessarily a lot of sense, unquote. Gaddafi responded furiously with a top official indicating priority for oil rights may be given to China and Russia. Crowley was forced to make a public apology. Quote, I understand my personal comments were perceived as a personal attack. These comments do not reflect U.S. policy and were not intended to offend. I apologize if they were taken that way. The if doesn't count. The Emmy Award-winning CBS producer who pleaded guilty to attempting to extort David Letterman was delighted to take a plea deal and avoid a trial that could have landed him in jail for 15 years. Robert Joel Halderman publicly apologized Tuesday after pleading guilty in the extortion plot. Got 6 months. A flyer that used a photo of the Twin Towers burning on 9/11 to advertise a Saskatchewan party pig roast drew condemnation this week in the province's legislature, prompting Premier Brad Wall and one of his top ministers to apologize. The flyer advertises New York Fire Chief Richard Picciotto, who was in the North Tower, as the featured speaker at an April 11th fundraising dinner. The event is a pig roast. Those words are featured on the flyer over the top of the flames coming from the building. Wall said he hadn't seen the advertisement. He admitted there may be an issue of juxtaposition. I don't think there was anything intended there, Wall told reporters. If anybody found that offensive, then I apologize to them because that would be neither the intent of it, and neither would it be the intent of the party. If. Mayor Phil Wallace of Martins Ferry, Ohio, is not denying a conversation that occurred during a private meeting with City Service Director John Davies and Lieutenant Phil Hartman of the police department. Wallace admits he used the word spook when he was describing some people who'd been in a bar fight in the city. I did say that, and I apologize, says Wallace. I will apologize to anybody for saying a thing like that. It was a word that just came out. It's not something I use every day. Farrah Fawcett was intentionally left out of the In Memoriam segment at last week's Oscars, organizers have admitted, facing a barrage of criticism after failing to honor the late star. The Academy executive director said the organizers did consider including her, but decided she was better known for her remarkable television work. It should be more appropriate for her to be honored at the Emmys, he told the AP. That's unlikely to placate Fawcett's family, saying they were deeply saddened and bereft after watching Patrick Swayze, Brittany Murphy, and others remembered during the performance by James Taylor. Hollywood icon Jane Fonda led a raft of critics expressing their disappointment on the social networking site Twitter. The Academy's decision to include Michael Jackson while excluding Farrah Fawcett has further fueled the criticism, although Jackson was in that movie that played for 2 weeks. This is it. Was it it? You tell me. You tell me, department, ladies and gentlemen. But the Academy did say an unusual number of extremely distinguished screenwriters died this year. There's nothing you can say to people, particularly to family members, within a day or two of the show that helps them at all. They tend to be surprised and hurt, said Davis of the Academy. And we understand that, and we're sorry for it. No apology yet for the omission of Henry Gibson in the list of major film actors who died last year. Well, that's for next week's Apologies of the Week. Dateline Jerusalem, Israeli Minister of the Interior Eli Yishai. Well, that's it. This week apologized for the raging storm generated by his ministry's approval of 1,600 new homes in East Jerusalem for Israelis, saying he had no intention to embarrass visiting U.S. President Joe Biden. In an interview with Israeli radio, Yishai said he was not informed beforehand of the decision announced Tuesday night by the ministry's district committee and that the matter was only a routine and technical procedure. I apologize for the distress the matter has caused, he said. If I had known, I would have postponed the authorization by a week or two, since we had no intention of provoking anyone. It's definitely unpleasant that it happened during Biden's visit. The right-wing minister stressed the problem is the timing. It's the timing. It's the timing. Not the substance of the decision, which he said he did not plan to cancel. The announcement drew swift condemnation from the Palestinians and the Obama administration, among others. A Montgomery County teacher who told a high school sophomore last week that she was dressed like a prostitute has apologized to the student and her mother. This is Montgomery County, Virginia. The Seneca Valley High School teacher made the remark and had a security guard escort the student to the main office, said the girl's mother. A school system spokesman said he couldn't comment on personnel matters, but the teacher's comment was inappropriate. Lucky she wasn't in that restaurant I was in last night next to that table full of... Hey, Dateline Oakland, an 8-year-old girl made up a story about almost being kidnapped in front of her elementary school in Oakland, police said. Police had apologized last week for their slow response time to the girl's initial report, but now apparently the story was not true. So the response time was a little too fast. Dateline Joliet, Illinois. Five young men were arrested for reportedly setting off a homemade bomb last week at a park. A witness said the quintet ignited a MacGyver-type explosive just after noon near the gazebo. No, not near the gazebo. They left the park after the explosion, and their vehicle was identified by responding officers. Police stopped an SUV nearby, allegedly saw three common household items required to make the explosive on the dashboard. The five young men reportedly admitted to detonating the device, saying they were bored and apologized to police. Somebody should find them some young girls dressed like prostitutes. Monsignor George Ratzinger, who directed the cathedral choir in Regensburg, Germany, from 1964 to 1994, just three decades, has apologized to victims of sexual abuse at the choir's boarding school. Monsignor Ratzinger said that he was not aware of any sexual abuse, but he did remember and regret physical punishment of students that could be considered abusive. "I'm deeply sorry for anyone whose spiritual or physical integrity was injured by abuse," he says. "Today such things are condemned, even more, because of greater sensitivities. I also condemn them, and simultaneously ask pardon from the victims." In case you think his last name sounds familiar, ladies and gentlemen, he's the Pope's brother. Yes, it is getting closer all the time. He said at the time he was choir director, he did not know that sexual abuse was taking place. There was never any talk of sexual abuse problems. Problems? And I had no idea that molestation was taking place. He did apologize for taking part in the corporal punishment of students. "At the beginning, I administered clips round the ear, but I always had a bad conscience about it," he said. "I was happy when in 1980 corporal punishment was banned by law." Glad we could make the Monsignor happy, ladies and gentlemen. The new chief executive of Associated Bank Corp, I guess this is in Chicago, apologized to almost 300 Chicago-area customers, prospects, and employees at a private breakfast, saying the Green Bay, Wisconsin-based lender has been too inwardly focused and was vowing to be more aggressive in the market. "We've done a lousy job for our customers," said Philip Flynn. "We're sorry, and we'll fix that." Workers have been shell-shocked by the bank's problems, he said. It's been beset with mounting problems. The bank had grown rapidly, but in 2009 it lost $161 million and its stock fell 45%. It received federal bailout money, but it was also criticized last year over plans eventually canceled to reward 100 high achievers with a trip to Puerto Rico. Dateline New London, Wisconsin. A soldier from New London has apologized for falsely claiming he was injured in Afghanistan for exaggerating his rank in awards. Army Specialist Jordan Olson got a hero's welcome last week when he flew home for medical evaluation. According to him, he said he was hurt by a roadside bomb. He wore the parachutist and combat action badges and said he was a sergeant. The Army said on Monday none of it was true. It will deal with the situation once Olson returns from leave. Another bank apology. Angela Iannelli returned home one day in October to find her house ransacked, doors padlocked, and pet parrot gone. It wasn't a burglar. It was Bank of America. The bank had repossessed her home even though the mortgage was up to date. Bank of America apologized, saying, "We will move quickly to review the allegations and consider any hardship that resulted." Dan Fromm, a spokesman for Bank of America, said the company has zero tolerance for such incidents. And another bank apology, HSBC. Anybody know what that stands for? I don't, and I feel bad about it. Admitted this week that a former employee stole records on 15,000 clients and passed them to French government authorities. The company apologized to its customers for the breach. And finally, Dateline Winnipeg, Greyhound has apologized after one of its drivers left 16 passengers stranded on the side of the highway about 45 kilometers away from their destination. The incident, said a spokesman, is inexcusable. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know that Karl Rove is out and about on a book tour. Yes, predicted here. Well, kind of obvious.
Still.
Said on Meet the Press today that it was not the administration's policy to depend on Iraq oil revenues to fund the war.
Well, kind of not.
Kind of forgetting that Paul Wolfowitz was in the administration and testified to Congress in 2003 that oil revenues would pay for the reconstruction. Well, it's not the war. That's just cleaning up after the war. Okay. Nil point. Anyway, you do know, it's being brought up again, that his, in the context of the book tour, that his nickname around the White House, based on the existence of a wildflower in Texas that grows out of cow patties every spring, is Turd Blossom.
Willie called me the architect, they called me Bush's brain. Two times we went campaigning, two times we drank champagne. I helped to build his legend, he helped to build my myth. Want to spend more time with family, just need time to find a family to spend it with. Oh, the Turd Blossom Special is taking me home, never more to roam, till I got a book that I wrote, or a special campaign to help black people vote. I'm as free as a bird, won't be deterred, I'm on the Turd Blossom Special. I can buy me a boat. Well, I sliced and dashed the voters like pigs on a spit. Then he issued that divided was the one we really hit. Oh, I would gerrymander for the commander-in-chief. See, he was the decider and the believer. I was the decisions and the believer. Oh, the Turd Blossom Special. That I can advise, then email him encrypted, cause that would be wise. I won't breathe the word, lest the deal be disinterred. I'm on the Turd Blossom Special, in my civilian guise. Oh, he called me Turd Blossom, that's what he liked to do. I called him the boss, and that amused him too. Majority that would last for years to come, but the war refused to end. The man who was the boss soon became the bum. Oh, the Turd Blossom Special is taking me home, where the cars drip with chrome, till I got a book that I have to promote, for a big campaign to help the black people vote. Don't be unduly stirred.
In the evening, when the kettle's on for tea, an old familiar feeling settles over me, and it's your face I see, and I believe that you are there. In a garden, when I stop to touch a rose and feel the petals soft and sweet against my nose, I smile and I suppose that somehow maybe you are there. When I'm dreaming and I find myself awake without a warning, and I rub my eyes and fantasize, and all at once I realize it's morning. Thank you. I'm dreaming and I find myself awake without a warning. And I rub my eyes and fantasize. And all at once I realize it's morning. And my fantasy is fading like a distant star at dawn. My dearest dream is gone. I sometimes think there's just one thing to do. Pretend the dream was true. And tell myself that you are there.
This is the show. And ladies and gentlemen, it's clean, it's cheap, it's too safe to be clean, and too safe to be cheap. French anti-nuclear campaigners claim a new power plant being built in Normandy. Well, Normandy, that's not attractive or anything, carries an accident risk of, quote, Chernobyl proportions, unquote. These are activists. They say leaked confidential documents show that tests on the third-generation pressurized water reactor present a potentially catastrophic scenario. The network has gotten hold of 8 internal papers showing the result of tests on the European pressurized reactor, the EPR, that it claims revealed defect in the mechanism that controls the nuclear reaction. The documents leaked by an insider at the French electricity firm EDF, which will run the new Flamanville 3 power station, date from between 2004 and 2009. Philippe Bruce, director of the anti-nuclear campaign, to the documents revealed that in certain circumstances the reactor ejected the cluster rods that regulate the nuclear reaction, causing a leak of coolant and eventually an explosion. A committee of experts asked by the organization to examine the documents concluded, quote, it seems that the conception of the EPR increases the risk of a Chernobyl-type accident, with the destruction of the reactor chamber and the massive dispersion of nuclear radiation into the atmosphere, unquote. The activists claim the company kept the findings secret and accused it of taking risks for economic reasons. The company says the documents were part of the normal process of analyzing risks, and no conclusions can be drawn from them at this moment. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is me sitting here drawing no conclusions. And now I'm drawing this other set of no conclusions. They look like the dog I draw. I can't draw. See, that's the problem. Even as international nuclear power producers keenly watch the fate of the civil nuclear liability bill in India, as many as 62 countries eager to launch or expand their nuclear energy programs assemble in Paris to explore the possibilities. What this is about is there's a bill going through the Indian Congress. And what would it do? The idea is for the liability, the financial liability of nuclear power station operators to be limited to about $110 million in the event of a nuclear accident. But it's never going to happen, so why would you want to limit the liability? This idea is to facilitate entry of foreign investment. Another way that the magic of the marketplace can't quite do it. The opposition parties see it as a move to favor American companies. French government officials have said that the passage of the legislation was crucial for the French company Areva's plans for India as well. It's absolutely necessary that India has the liability legislation in place for compensation in case of accidents. How can Areva or any other company go ahead without clear guidelines about compensation, said a French government official, meaning limitations on competition. But I'm not drawing any conclusions. I can't draw. And Exelon. Well, they must be good. They're Exelon. Agreed this week to pay more than $1 million to settle lawsuits filed by Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan after the company allowed radioactive tritium to leak outside 3 of its nuclear plants. Same thing that's been leaking from Vermont Yankee in Vermont. But Vermont isn't near Illinois. The legal settlement involves leaks of tritium-contaminated water that seeped into the ground around the company's Braidwood, Byron, and Dresden plants. The penalty includes fines and money to fund environmental projects in those counties. Tritium, the radioactive form of hydrogen, it's just hydrogen, is found naturally in groundwater, but it's also one of the byproducts of the nuclear energy production cycle. Exposure can increase the risk of cancer, but the EPA considers it one of the least dangerous radioactive substances because it leaves the body quickly. So that's a good list. The least dangerous radioactive substances. The problems included leaks from a pipeline that carries tritium-contaminated water from the plant to the Kankakee River. Exelon has already agreed to buy out one homeowner and to compensate others for any loss in home value from the contamination. Under orders from the state, the company also undertook steps to clean up contaminated groundwater, improve the monitoring of leaks, and ensure the wastewater in the pipeline is diluted enough to meet federal standards. We want folks to know there was never a threat to public health or safety, said an Exelon spokesperson. I know what you want folks to think. That's very clear. That's almost too obvious.
Exelon.
Yeah, you could have that. You owe me big time, but you can have it. It's clean, it's cheap, it's safe, it's clean, it's cheap, it's safe. It's too clean to be safe. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Times of London, a night raid carried out by U.S. and Afghan gunmen led to the deaths of two pregnant women, a teenage girl, and two local officials in an atrocity which NATO then tried to cover up, according to survivors. The operation in February was a botched pre-dawn assault on a policeman's home a few miles outside Gardez, eastern Afghanistan. In a statement after the raid, NATO claimed that the force had found the women's bodies tied up, gagged, and killed in a room. But a Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, investigation suggests NATO's claims are either willfully false or, at best, misleading. Hearts and minds. And apropos of Congressman Massa's, by the way, he disappeared quickly, didn't he? Congressman Massa's in the cold, cold ground. Anyway, apropos of his claims that his tickle fights with other members of Congress were nothing compared to what he went through in the Navy. That's what he told Larry King this week. Australian officials have launched an investigation into allegations that sailors on board a Navy ship were running a sex competition during overseas deployment last year. That's the Australian Navy. The inquiry comes after an initial investigation was found to be biased. Three sailors from the HMAS Success were sent home last May after reports emerged the sailors were competing to have sex with the most number of female crewmates. The investigations will look into allegations that dollar values were assigned to each woman on board and that sailors could win extra money if they had sex with a female officer or a lesbian. The inquiry is led by a retired judge. And a good thing, too. In the Navy, Australian style. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and more on the general subject of certain kind of fun and games coming up next here on Le Show.
It just rolled like a river to the
as the wind across the mountaintop. Hey, my love is moving and it just won't stop. I turn you loose, honey, I let you fly. Now all I can do is hang my head and cry. My love will not change, my love will not change. It just rolls like a river to the sea of your name. My love will not change, my love will not change. It's as steady as the rhythm of the pouring rain. My love will not change. My love will not change. Might as well.
We're back in Los Angeles tonight, where I'm emceeing the Nate and Al Foundation's first annual Celebrity Brisket Toss for the benefit of the shoulder pad kids. Tomorrow night, a major panel on the forgotten word in the healthcare reform debate, Botox. Tonight, here in our Los Angeles studio, an old friend who's back with a new look and a new band that's something old again. I think I got that. I got that backwards. The old band is something new again. He'll explain it. The great Dewey Gordon, one-time lead singer of the great boy band Boys Are Us. Dewey, you're looking different.
Yes, Mr. King, I shaved my head about 3 weeks ago, so you could say now the only gleam you see from me isn't in my eyes.
Was this a disease thing or what?
No, sir. Good question. Thank but you. Actually, I lost a Facebook bet. Some of my celebrity poker buddies bet me that I couldn't hit the 2,000 friends mark in 48 hours. And you know what? I like this look. It really fits this new chapter of my life that I hope we're going to get a chance to talk about.
This is the thing that was in the prompt, the thing.
Yes, sir. Mm. You know, the kind of the Swen Galley-type figure behind Boys R Us, the great Mr. Nate Pendleman, called me a few weeks ago, and he said, the boy band thing is coming back in England. It's only a matter of time before it hits over here. We could get on the ground floor of that bandwagon, reunite Boys R Us, and, you know, Mr. King, Mr. Pendleman's always been blessed with the gift of bluntness. He said he could get me out of the one-way train wreck of my solo career.
Oh, that's a little cruel. You had that hit in Japan, didn't you?
Well, I wrote a song that was used in the Hello Kitty musical. It was the melancholy ballad at the end of the first act. It was called Goodbye Kitty.
Yeah, I remember hearing you talk about that. Mm-hmm. So does Nate call the other boys in the band, too?
Yes, he does, or he did. Uh-huh. We all got together a week or so ago. You know, I hadn't seen Vin, Trey, and Chuchi in maybe a dozen years. We all kind of just hung out for a while, and then, Mr. King, the weirdest thing happened.
And then what happened?
Well, we just started messing around, you know. Playful stuff like guys do.
Yeah.
And before you know it, Mr. King, we were in a tickle fight.
A tickle fight?
Yeah. All three of them end up on top of me. I could almost not breathe. I was laughing so hard. It was wild.
This is like the new thing, right?
Well, sir, I know the great Congressman Massa talked about being in one. All I know is it really brought us back to the old Boys R Us spirit. Yeah. I realized something that night, Mr. King. I missed my old partners. We had something very special that was distilled in those long bus rides and those one-on-one sessions with Mr. Pendleman. And, you know, so, yeah, we decided this is the time. We're not getting any younger.
No, but to be fair, you're not getting any better.
Well, in a way, I think we are.
I meant you are.
But, you know, as they say, the proof is only when you dive real deep straight into the pudding, and that's where we are, Mr. King. The great producer Teddy Face heard our little story, came up with a song about it, and I brought the freshly mastered tune here with me tonight.
This is a world premiere of the new Boys Are Us song. What's it called?
Kind of in honor of us, Mr. King. It's called Boys Will Be Boys.
The great Dewey Gordon with Boys Are Us. Roll VT. Oh, sorry. That's in the parentheses.
Don't you know those tears? much better than boogie nights. You got to fight for the right for boys to be boys. You make me squirm all the way from stem to stern. The early bird gets the worm. You got me in a tickle fight. I just can't breathe when I'm under that spell you weave. Better to give than to receive when you're in a tickle fight.
Will be boys. Do we got to ask you something about this whole tickle fight thing? Yeah, and I've known you a long time. You're not gay, are you?
Mr. King, if I were, I promise you'd be the first to know.
Oh, thanks.
After my wife, if, you know, I ever got lucky enough to find the right gal.
Hey, one of those Facebook friends could be the one.
Record comes out Tuesday.
The great Dewey Gordon, part of the new Boys R Us. All the original members are back.
Right. Chuchi grew a mustache, and of course I shaved my head. Otherwise, we're just like you remember us.
Okay. Now, you're donating the proceeds from this tune to a charity or to Congressman Massa or anything?
Not that I know of, Larry, but you never know.
Thanks, Dewey. Coming up, Judge Judy and Dr. Phil on Who's Better, Doctors or Lawyers, for the rest of the full hour.
Se trate de um amor perdido, resta a chama, mas a hora de fazer o meia-culpa é agora. E exibir outros dados que impliquem outros resultados, com a benção do perdão, por que não? Não botei fé, nunca dei margem pra sofrimento. Tô atento, mas os dias com a marca.
cada melancolia são lembrados e é possível que no afã de uma outra briga venha errado sem perdão. Mas quem não? Mas quem não? Não sei se o meu rival, descrito como tal no seu caso de amor, vacilou, não fez o que é pra se fazer. Mas sei que o passado vem cobrar meu bem, e nessa vontade de chorar, viver no bar, buscando aliviar a dor da solidão, sem ação, só pensando em voltar a sorrir ou chorar. Com a vida que antes parecia rasa e cinza, em verdade era pão, era vinho, era chão. Trate de um amor perdido, esta chama mais a hora de fazer o meia-culpa agora e exibir outros dados que impliquem outros resultados com a pensão do perdão. Por que não? Por que não? Não sei se o meu rival, descrito como tal no seu caso de amor, vacilou, não fez o que é pra se fazer. Mas sei que o passado vem cobrar meu bem, e nessa é um tal de chorar, viver no bar, buscando aliviar a dor da solidão, sem ação, só pensando em voltar a sorrir ou chorar. Com a vida que antes parecia rasa e cinza, em verdade era pão, era vinho, era chão. Era pão, era vinho, era chão.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Sure you will.
Soft, listen to the warm.
According to a study by Harvard University scientists, invasive species appear to thrive during times of climate change, meaning the species could become more prevalent and more destructive. The study suggests that the invasive species are more apt to thrive because they're better able to adjust to the changing timing of annual activities such as flowering, fruiting, and the Academy Awards. These results demonstrate for the first time that climate change likely plays a direct role in promoting non-native species success, says the author of the study, Charles Davis, assistant professor of organismic and evolutionary biology at Harvard. In the United States alone, the estimated cost of invasive species exceeds $120 billion, and that's not counting what the Army Corps is going to spend trying to get those invasive carp out of the Great Lakes. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. Let's all get some sleep this week. What do you say? I say turn the clock back right now. No, I don't. I like the late sunsets. Get some sleep. We'll be back here next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet. You've heard of that. At two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone at stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like it leaking tritium where you are, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of music heard on this broadcast, they're both available, along with so much more, at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks, and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM right here in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Le Show is on Twitter, at LeTwits. Anybody want to meet for a tickle fight? I'll be down in the parking lot in about 2 minutes. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.